You're listening to the CEO Series with Carl Moore on the iHeartRadio Talk Network.
Welcome to the CEO Series. I'm Carl Moore from McGill University. Each week, the CEO Series takes you inside the minds and lives of some of Canada and indeed the world's top leaders to discuss strategy, leadership, and today's pressing business issues. And some of the world's top leaders have spent time with us, like Justin Trudeau, Muhammad Yunus, Nobel Peace Prize winner, and Sir Richard Branson. This show provides a thin, well, perhaps not so thin slice, of the kind of thoughtful leaders leading some of today's most successful organizations. Today, I'm delighted to be speaking with Roger Martin, former dean of the Rotman School of Management and one of the world's great business thinkers. Roger, thanks for joining us today.
Quick question to start off. Where did you grow up and what did your family do for a living way back in the day?
I grew up in South Central Ontario, so about 15 miles northwest of Kitchener-Waterloo. I lived in a small town, so it was seven houses, a blacksmith shop, a harness shop, and a general store when I was growing up. It's big now. It's got to be like, I think it's maybe 300 people total now, so it's gigantic in comparison. My dad, when I was 2 years old, started a business. So I grew up at the feet of an entrepreneur. It was an animal feed manufacturing business called Wallenstein Feed and Supply Limited that is now run by my older brother. So I grew up not on a farm, but we're surrounded by farms in a little hamlet, and we served the farmers.
You and your brother must occasionally reflect that you've taken very different paths. But you're both equally happy, in a sense, and engaged in the world a very different way.
Yeah, I think so. I think he's very happy. His dad's very happy to have had a son. He never tried to get us, any of us, to be in it, in the business. And I actually acted as a bit of a matchmaker because we all thought, because dad didn't encourage us to be in the business, we didn't want us to be in the business. My brother, who's a math whiz, he went to the University of Waterloo and took combinatorics and optimization and then got into business and was working for General Motors in the finance department and was getting tired of working there. And he came to me to say, man, I'm tired of this. And I said, why don't you go work with dad? And he said, no, dad never wanted any of us to work in the business. So I went to dad and said, dad, Rick's not having much fun. You're trying to sort of turn it over to your head of sales and start to go into kind of retirement mode. And that's not really working so well. Why don't you ask Rick to join the business? And he said, oh, I've never wanted to force any of my sons or daughter into the business. And I said, this isn't forcing. Why don't you guys just talk to one another? And sure enough, they did. And Rick joined the business and then took it over maybe, I don't know, 10 years later or 7 years later. And it's been there ever since. And it's now a very big business. So I think Rick has had the joy of building a nice big business. It's a private company, but a big, very big private company. And dad's got to see the second generation take over. And the third is on the way to taking over probably in the next 5 or 10 years. And I've done, you know, other stuff and happy with that other stuff too.
We're speaking with Roger Martin, former dean of the Rotman School of Management and one of the world's top business thinkers. I'm Carl Moore, and you're listening to the CEO Series.
Well, you were an entrepreneur at Monitor to a considerable degree. Well, one of your neighbors actually turned out to be one of the most famous writers in the world. Tell us about Malcolm Gladwell for a minute.
Sure. And how you knew him. Well, I knew him because he and my youngest brother, Terry, are best friends. In fact, there's a troika of them, Terry, Malcolm, and a guy named Bruce Headlam. And Terry and Malcolm went to the same rural elementary school, I think in grade 5, 6, 7, 8, or maybe 6, 7, 8. We always got shipped around to various schools. They'd bus you to because they were trying to consolidate. So it was in a place called Floridale, which was, again, a huge metropolis. There's probably 400 or 500 people in Floridale, which seemed very, very, very large in comparison to Wallenstein. But Malcolm was over at our house all the time. They were playing Risk to all hours of the night, Malcolm, Terry, and Bruce Headlam. And it was sort of like what's in the water kind of thing, because so they all then went to Elmira District Secondary School in Elmira, which was the closest town. And Malcolm, you know, graduated and went on to become one of the world's most famous nonfiction writers. Bruce Hedlum went on to a career where, by the end of his career, he was the editorial page editor of the New York Times. And my brother Terry is one of the world's half a dozen foremost Russian history scholars. He's a chaired professor at Harvard University in the history department. So it's like, duh, how did that happen?
It's really astonishing. Small town produces Malcolm Gladwell, your brother, yourself, and the other friend. Just, it's really astonishing that would happen, given, you know, mainly you stay in that area and so on. So anyway, it's interesting to note. Any theories of why that happened?
Well, it's harder to tell for the others. One, there was one common thing. So all of those three, what they've done, and me, have a heck of a lot to do with writing, right? And we had a stunningly magnificent English teacher at Amire District Secondary School. In my day, we went to grade 13, so I had him in grade 12 and grade 13, William Exley. And he had a profound influence on us as writers. Tough, right? There'd be somebody read marks on your essays when you handed them in, but they always made sense. It was like, oh, I get it. Okay, yeah. That paragraph is weak in this way, and your construction, you know, what was your real logic flow? So I think one thing that made a huge difference was Mr. William Exley, who's still with us. Thank you. Thank God he's retired. They had a 75th reunion at the, or a 75th anniversary for Elmira District Secondary School about, I don't know, 5 or 7 years ago. And they had the four of us on a panel chaired by Mr. Exley to talk about, hey, you know, how did this happen anyway?
We're speaking with Roger Martin, former dean of the Rotman School of Management and one of the world's top business thinkers. I'm Coral Moore, and you're listening to the CO Series.
Recall, you went to Harvard College and then the Harvard MBA. Was there a gap between those two, or did you go straight into the MBA?
I went straight into the MBA, and I was sort of badly behaved, to be honest. So I played on the volleyball team for all 4 years at college, and I was the captain, co-captain, for the last 2 years. And in our senior year, the spring of our senior year, our coach announced that he was leaving. He was going to go coach a professional club team in Greece. And I thought to myself, man, I'd love to coach the team now that I'm, you know, my eligibility is up. I'd love to coach it. And also, I then had a girlfriend who was also a Harvard College senior who is going to the Kennedy School of Government to do a master in public policy. And so I wanted to hang out in Cambridge so that I could be with my then girlfriend and coach the Harvard men's volleyball team, varsity volleyball team. And so I needed a ironclad cover story that wouldn't make me seem like kind of a useless layabout, right? I mean, you go to Harvard College, you graduate, and then you coach volleyball and hang out with your girlfriend. That sort of sucked. It would have been great, but it sounds pretty bad. And so my cover story was, I'm going to go to Harvard Business School because you can't be accused of being a useless layabout if you're at Harvard Business School. So I applied to Harvard Business School and went. So it was my cover story.
Harvard back then, even today, is almost entirely case studies. Did you use case studies when you taught at Rotman?
Sure. So this is the interesting thing. People don't really understand about the case study. They think Harvard Business School does a thing called case studies, and that's different than everybody else. It turns out that what's different about Harvard Business School than anybody else is that the professors write cases as their research. So they produce most of the cases, not all of them. There are dribs and drabs, as you well know, from others, like Ivy produces some for the Harvard Business School case database, Darden, McGill May, I don't even know. But from what I can tell, the entire business school world has probably gone to where between 25 and 30% of every class, all the classes, if you just added up all the classes a McGill MBA does, a Desitel MBA does, or a Rotman MBA does, probably 30% of them are taught using a Harvard Business School case. So it's become sort of standard fare across as a teaching vehicle. Now, it's found more in some courses, strategy, marketing, it would be found there, maybe HR, less in finance and accounting, because those are easier to teach in other ways. So Harvard is only an outlier in that everything is taught by way of case. I had 3 cases a day, 5 cases a week for every week of my 2 years at Harvard Business School. That's it, a steady diet of it. So they're at the extreme end. Ivy, I think, is either there or close to that. Darden at University of Virginia is close to that. But most schools are in the sort of, we teach a bunch of stuff via other methods and use Harvard Business School cases when that makes sense.
Other than writing HBRs, big selling books and all, you also consult as a strategist, but just more as a, you know, one person firm largely.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
What do you do? Like, you work with the CEOs, or what's the consulting you do these days?
Yeah, I think at latest count, I think there's 14 CEOs of various companies. And mainly I just help CEOs think through strategy choices and other choices related to strategy. I always end up in my CEO relationships talking to them a lot about people, HR, you know, how do I develop this person who should succeed me? How long should I stay? Those kinds of things. But it's mainly helping them think about strategy.
Today, I'm delighted to be speaking with Roger Martin, former dean of the Rotman School of Management and one of the world's great business thinkers. I'm Carl Moore, and you're listening to the CEO Series. Next up, we'll talk about what strategy really means to Roger.
Exclusive access to some of the most successful leaders out there. This is the CEO Series with Carl Moore on the iHeartRadio Talk Network.
Hello again. I'm talking with Roger Martin, former dean of the Rotman School of Management today and one of the world's great business thinkers.
I taught the five forces recently. We still use some of the ideas, and that's great. What's Mike like? Like, I call him Michael, you call him Mike. So you have an area of, you know, knowledge we don't. What's he like as a human being?
So, I call him Mike in that part because we were business partners for like 15 years. What's he like? Mike is kind of very, very smart. He's very curious. After he wrote Competitive Strategy, he could have rested on that laurel for the rest of his life and been a superstar. And he's written another, you know, I don't know how many like super influential books. How about I figure out how nations compete, competitive advantage of nations? How do I figure out how healthcare works, redefining healthcare? So he's endlessly curious. He's very smart. He is a great agglomerator of ideas. So he pulls together things like competitive strategy, pulled together some stuff from industrial organization economics and from general management at Harvard Business School. So he's always good at like fitting together stuff and making sense of it. He is a rocket scientist. So he was an aeronautics engineer at Princeton before coming to Harvard to do his PhD. So he kind of thinks a lot like an engineer, right? Okay. He's got that kind of Cartesian kind of view, and he writes a bit in that style. But he's just quite something. You just don't find that many people who, when they're that successful, just keep on kind of working at it. So the thing that I would say as a partner, a business partner of his, that was intriguing and still intrigues me to this day, is he's way less interested than I am in how you get somebody to do something different. Like I always found Mike would be sort of frustrated. Like he'd go and talk to a company and tell them, you know, you've got to be either low cost or differentiated, and you need a strategy, you to make choices. And when they wouldn't, he would sort of be a little more sort of, you know, more, you know, flabbergasted. Why not? Well, you know, kind of like, it was like, they should just do it. And so we were actually in some sense nicely plug compatible, because I've always been interested in the question of, well, after you have this insight, right, you should be low cost or differentiated. Brilliant insight of Mike Porter, you know, huge contributor. Well, how do you go from I'm stuck in the middle now to I am now either low cost or differentiated, and here's how. I was always tremendously interested in that. So we were sort of good partners. I always worked on the how do you get from here to there.
We're speaking with Roger Martin, former dean of the Rotman School of Management and one of the world's top business thinkers. I'm Coral Moore, and you're listening to the CEO Series.
You left Rotman, and you're writing about strategy, writing a lot of big books that make a big impact. This is a core strategy class, Roger. What is strategy? Terry and I want to know.
Well, I think of it as strategy is making an integrative set of choices that positions you in an industry, in a place, so that you can win, right? So that in the place that you've chosen to compete, you are better than anybody else. It's the set of choices that choose that place and the how you do that. And that builds the capabilities to do that, the management systems that support it.
So it's based somewhat on the history of the firm. Like, what are you good at today? Who are your customers? Stuff like that. It's based on that as opposed to focusing on the industry you're in.
Well, I mean, it's a bit of both. I mean, in the sense that those things are both pieces of the puzzle. You've got to ask the question of all the playing fields that I could play on out there. What one do I want to plop my chips down on, my assets down on? That might be your current one, but you might say, you know what, I don't love my current playing field. I like that one over there better. So there's always a bit of the what here now, what am I good at, and where might I play, and how might I win in new ways. I mean, if it's the latter, right, you've got to have a story, right? Strategy is a story that says here's how I would get from here to there, right? You know, I might want to compete over there, but if I've got none of the assets and I can't build them fast enough, right, then that's a silly, unactionable strategy.
We're speaking with Roger Martin, former dean of the Rotman School of Management and one of the world's top business thinkers.
When you think about Uber and technology companies, they're kind of reinventing what industry you're in at times. Amazon was a bookseller, now it sells almost everything, at least our household.
Yeah.
Is industry still a relevant concept, or has the Uberization of the world kind of changed that to a large degree? Where do you stand on that?
Yeah, these are all abstractions. So I'm tend to not be very doctrinaire on abstractions. If you want to call it an industry, I'm fine with it. If you want to call it a playing field, if you want to call it whatever else. All I would say is that the choice of that field is really important. And one cool thing, and this is where, you know, there are lots of theories, you know, blue ocean strategy. So it sort of says, well, kind of create a field or build a field that doesn't exist now, which you may want to call an industry, or it's just a place that you're going to compete. I mean, the way I think of it is the hardest way to win is by fully overlapping somebody else's where to play. But this is essentially the economist's kind of dream, right? The economist's dream is there's some industry that you've defined and you have a whole bunch of companies that plop themselves down and sort of play in the same way there. Because then you'll force the customers will be able to trade you off one against another, and you force profitability down and whatever. My dream is the opposite, right? It's that every company figures out a somewhat different place to play and a place to add all sorts of value there. So I like the mutual fund business, right? I like the fact that people want mutual funds or exchange traded funds or traditional mutual funds. They want those things. And you've got this big company in Boston called Fidelity that says, we're going to sell mainly managed funds that we have investment managers who pick the stocks for them. You want a growth fund, you want a this fund, you want a that fund. You know, we sell managed funds. And there's another company down in Valley Forge, Pennsylvania called Vanguard that says, no, that's a bad idea. That loses money for the investors. We're going to sell only index funds where there is no investment management. I love that industry. Why? Right? Because they haven't plopped themselves square on top of one another doing the same thing. They've said, you know, we're going to do different things. And if you're a Bogle head, you like Jack Bogle and believe what he says about investment management, you buy some Vanguard funds. And if you believe Ned Johnson, or now Abigail Johnson, his daughter runs it now, you say, I want a fund that has a great investment manager with a great track record. Hooray. Two different where to plays that are somewhat overlapping, but not entirely, and very different ways to win. That's what I like. I like industries where there's diversity of strategies, and the hardest way to have a strategy is to have exactly the same where to play. And then it's harder to have a how to win. But if you can have a somewhat different where to play and a somewhat different how to win, then you can have a bunch of people win. Does Vanguard win or does Fidelity win?
Today, I'm delighted to be speaking with Roger Martin, former dean of the Rotman School of Management and one of the world's top business thinkers. I'm Carl Moore, and you're listening to the CEO Series. Next up, we'll talk about Roger's perspectives on the best ways to do strategy.
Top-notch insight from proven leaders. This is the CEO Series with Carl Moore on the iHeartRadio Talk Network.
Hello again. I'm talking with Roger Martin, former dean of the Rotman School of Management today and one of the world's great business thinkers.
So 2 years at MBA, Harvard, 900 cases. What are the things the students should know about doing cases well?
Well, here's the problem. I'm not a giant fan of the case method of teaching.
Mintzberg agrees with you 100%.
Yeah. I mean, and I don't know, I've never talked to Henry about that. So he may have a different reason for not liking. For me, it's a little too manipulative for my liking. You know, the professor has got a teaching note that accompanies that only professors can get. Students can't write in and order the teaching note. And the teaching note says, here's the point of the case. Here's how you're supposed to get the dialogue to go to. You do this first, establish these premises and this and this and this to get them to here. And I just don't like that. I'd rather, if that's what you're going to do, tell the students, I've got a teaching note. And Terry, when you put up your hand and say X, it's something that I wanted to hear because it's consistent with what the teaching note said I should be teaching. And whoever, Raphael, I'm not going to acknowledge what you said or put it up on the board because it was inconsistent with what the teaching note said. So that sort of somewhat manipulative aspect of it, I don't love. So in my teaching. I taught a minimum of two courses every year, other than the first year. The first year I didn't teach. The remaining 14 years as dean, I taught between 2 and 7 courses a year. And I never used Harvard Business School cases.
So after Harvard, when did you join Monitor? And how did you get involved with Monitor?
Well, Monitor was sort of like, there were two breeding grounds for Monitor. One was in the then competition and strategy teaching group at Harvard Business School, and that included Mike Porter, led by Mike Porter, Mark Fuller, and John Wells. And then there was another node in Section B of the class of 81 of Harvard Business School. That was me, Mike Bell, Joe Fuller. And Mike Bell's roommate was Mark Thomas, who was in, I don't know, Section G or H or something. So that kind of was the cadre who sort of talked about the fact that, you know, Mike had become a giant superstar when he published the book Competitive Strategy in 1980. It became the best-selling business book of all time by far. People would call him up and say, Mike, come do this competitive strategy stuff for us. He tried to work with two consulting companies, actually, Strategic Planning Associates for a while, Walker Lewis's firm that's now part of Oliver Wyman, you know, the Mercer Oliver Wyman kind of thing. And then he tried working with Bain and company. But what he found out is that when he sent a client over to those guys, they wanted to do SPA stuff or Bain stuff, not Mike stuff. And then the person would call back Mike and said, Mike, I wanted to do your stuff. And they did this other stuff. And so eventually it came to the conclusion that we had a build firm. And so that's what happened. And the various people in that group sort of got together at over various kind of months/couple of years, and so that's what I did. So I was part of the cabal that thought the world needed another consulting firm, and basically it was to commercialize the ideas in Mike's book because there was very large demand for it out in the business world.
We're speaking with Roger Martin, former dean of the Rotman School of Management and one of the world's top business thinkers.
Why did you leave Monitor and go to Rotman? What brought that on?
It, you know, to be honest, it sounds goofy, but it was patriotism, right? I'd been working down in Cambridge at Monitor Company, consulting to all these global companies around the world. And what I came to the conclusion of is that, you know, Canada's companies had to probably up their game to compete to be globally competitive. And I felt it was a true shame for a great country like Canada, like a really great country like Canada, that it had no globally consequential business school. It just didn't. If a meteorite would have hit the top 10 Canadian business schools, nobody in the rest of the world would have particularly cared. I thought Canada needed to have at least one globally competitive, globally consequential business school. I also harbored the hope that if it had one of those, others would then follow and everybody would up their game. And so when Rob Pritchard, the president of University of Toronto, approached me and said, I want you to be the next dean of my business school, which was like, you know, I was minding my own business, right? I was actually consulting to a company he was on the board of, and he saw me in action and decided on the basis of that I should be a dean of a business school. You know, I had zero experience at that, but it kind of pulled at my patriotic heartstrings to say, okay, well, I mean, I've always thought Canada should have one great business school, at least one great business school. And this is as good a place to do it as any. We've got a president who likes that. Got a bunch of other faculties that are really, truly outstanding, like the medical school and the law school and the engineering school, whatever. Let's do it. And, you know, I feel good in retrospect. We succeeded. And in my view, we succeeded so dramatically that other excellent schools that weren't playing the game kind of hard enough and competitively enough upped their game. So Ivy upped its game, Schulich upped its game, McGill upped its game, right? In part by getting tuition deregulated so you have the resources to do it. But I think a lot of that was in response to, hey, you know, Rotman's done it. Rotman's figured out how to hire the best faculty members in the world and pay world-class salaries for world-class scholars, I guess. I guess you can do that. So that was That was the motivation. It was patriotism.
COVID-19, did that mess with strategy at all? It must have.
Sure. I mean, it just showed how much we assume that the future is going to be a lot like the past, and it can be completely unlike the past. So if we thought this is the range you can get, it can go from here to here, and then COVID comes along, you can say, whoa, it can go from here to here pretty fast. And I honestly think that one of the biggest things that's going to come out of COVID in terms of investments is there will be more investments in resilience. The investments in efficiency, right? You want to make investments in efficiency when you're sure what efficiency entails. But if what's seemed efficient has just become inefficient, right? So I'm gonna offshore all of my manufacturing to the deepest, darkest regions of China, right? And then the worldwide logistics system gets screwed up. You can have a super efficient, as long as the ships are loading and sailing and unloading, system in the world. But if it's not resilient to disruptions in that, then you got a problem. Doesn't matter that it's efficient. It's not resilient. So I think that's going to be a big thing.
Today, I'm delighted to be speaking with Roger Martin, former dean of the Rotman School of Management and one of the world's great business thinkers. I'm Carl Moore, and you're listening to the CEO Series. Next up, we'll talk about Roger's experience with CEOs and advice he has for people entering the workforce.
They made it, and they're telling you how. You're listening to the CEO Series with Carl Moore on the iHeartRadio Talk Network.
Hello again. I'm talking with Roger Martin, former dean of the Rotman School of Management today, and one of the world's great business thinkers.
So the CEO job is strategy with his or her team. Mintzberg talks about emergent strategy, where you got to get ideas from all over the organization. Is it an emergent or more deliberate approach, or how does it work in the real world that you're in?
I mean, it's clearly both, right? So I have lots of time for Henry, great guy, the first truly great Canadian management scholar. I think he made a point, which is it's emergent to say it's not deliberative at all, and that it's fantasy. I'm probably somewhere in between that says you can think it through, but it's emergent in the sense that it's about the future. Nobody knows what the future is going to hold for sure. I mean, you can make guesses. So I think a strategy is shortening your odds rather than being 10 to 1 at success. You get 7 to 4, and that's good, but you still might fail, or there might be curveballs thrown. And so you have to keep adjusting your strategy as you go. As you probably know, I think of this question, what would have to be true is the most important question in strategy. And so I say, you should ask the question, you should say, well, here could be a strategy that we could follow. Here's a where to play, how to win. Well, what would have to be true about the industry and about customers and about competitors and about us for that to be successful? And you write out the what would have to be trues and decide whether you can make them true enough or they are true enough. Mm-hmm. But I then say, take that what would have to be true chart and tack it up in front of your desk, and every morning come to work and say, if the things that had to be true for that to be a good strategy still kind of look like they're holding true, then just put your head back down and go to work on whatever you were working on your current strategy. And if one of those things has changed and is no longer true, it's time for you to rethink your strategy. So it has to morph and evolve, but it doesn't in the sort of the wild and crazy ways people think it does. Oh, you should do here and here, and you shouldn't think about strategy. Like, lots of people have taken Henry, absolutely the wrong way, right? Which is that I will wait until it becomes clear to then decide my strategy, right? And of course, it never becomes clear if you take that attitude. That's not what Henry said at all. Henry, to me, was more, here's a warning. Guys, you can do all the planning you want, but the world is going to evolve in its own sweet little way, and you better be ready to adjust. That's more my interpretation of what the point Henry was trying to get across, and I agree 100% with that.
Roger, a lot of students and young people these days will be thinking about entering the workforce. What advice do you have for them to be integral and important parts of their organizations?
Well, I have sort of goofy expressions, but this is one of mine. I have something called the doctrine of relentless utility. So just be relentlessly useful, and good things will happen to you. And if you ask, well, what does that mean, Roger? Well, what is useful, right? Well, when somebody gives you money for doing something like your job, you should be asking, how can I be relentlessly useful to the entity that is giving me that money? They exchange employment for you being useful. And if you're just always thinking about how can I be useful, how can I be useful, how can I be useful, then good things will happen. And this is what I did at the Rotman School. I kind of sat our external team, right? The media relations, the magazine, Rotman Magazine, alumni, and events, the foursome. And we would sit down every week. And I was relentless on relentless utility. I said, who, Steve Ehrenberg, you're doing the events. Who are you trying to be useful for? And he in the early days, he would sort of hum and haw around trying to think, what do I mean by it? But fairly soon we got figured out, well, I'm useful for the business people in Toronto who are interested in content. I'm useful to the book publishers who like to have their authors get distribution. I'm useful to Karen Christensen, who runs the magazine, to help her get content ideas. Da, da, da. And I just focus on that, and everything else will take care of itself. Ken McGuffin, who are you going to be relentlessly useful for? You're going to be for reporters. They call and they want a story on that. They want somebody to comment on this story. You sign them up with one of the professors, get that professor kind of well set up to give some good quote so that will appear in the paper and help Rotman's reputation. Just be relentlessly useful. And in all of those areas, we ended up doing better than any other competitor. We at one point, then we stopped buying the service, but we had a service that tracked our share of voice among the 33 Canadian business schools. And when we got up to 60% share of voice, so the other 32 had to share 40 points and we got 60 points, we stopped paying the $5,000 a year to subscribe to the measurement service because we had won. And it was all the doctrine of relentless utility. One guy, Ken McGuffin, they all talked about our media relations department must be so strong. It was, but it was one guy. But it was the doctrine of relentless utility. And so he's an incredibly, incredibly kind of useful. Everybody in the business school world knows he's the best in the business school world. Why? Relentless utility. So that's all I'd say is you got to wake up every morning and say, how can I be useful? And if you do, the sky is the limit.
Last question, Roger. I get to interview a bunch of CEOs. Mm-hmm. What should I ask them from your viewpoint? What are the topics that are important, newish topics to talk to CEOs about and learn from them?
Well, I mean, a lot of what's on their mind these days is sustainability, right? Which is mainly like environmental sustainability, not other kinds of sustainability, and then DEI, right? They see DEI as sort of a freight train coming down the tracks right at them, and they better have something intelligent to say and do on that front. They all know it. You don't have to tell them that. They all know that. I think top line growth / innovation is a big topic for CEOs. None of them are satisfied with their rate of innovation, and the vast majority of them are not satisfied with top line growth. And so thinking about how you get top line growth without acquisition, sort of top line kind of organic as opposed to inorganic growth, those I think would be the topics that they would glom onto. And on DEI, they'll be like all ears. How should I think about that? Diversity, equity, inclusion. Sorry, I shouldn't use buzzwords, but I'm not sure everybody heard. Sure. And it's just, how do I even start to think about that is the question that they'd love answers on.
This is the CEO Series. We'd like to thank Roger for joining us today. We also like to thank our technical producer, Marco Campagna, and our show producer, Youssef Sahoni. Thank you for tuning into the CEO Series. À la prochaine.